Hey, this is Craig Custis with The Athletic, joined by Sean Gentile on the Tuesday edition of The Athletic Hockey Show, The Americans Edition. Sean, we have let me just tease what we have a little bit, and then we can talk, Sean, which I'm looking forward to very much. We have John Vogel joining the show later. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for us, and he's been on the heavy news beat around that team for months now, and it's just relentless. There's a coach to be hired still. There's probably a front office to fill out, and oh yeah, they have to trade their best player. They don't have to, but they should at this point. And we'll get into the Jack Eichel discussion there. We're going to lean into the offseason a little bit. There was some that Matthew Tkachuk was trending on Twitter last night, and we can't resist that discussion at all. We're going to get into that. But Sean, first, let's talk about the Lightning just pouring it on the Islanders last night. I don't know if this just reestablishes their dominance, or is this just how the playoffs go and that game's going to be completely forgotten by the time they get back on the ice?
Well, first, be honest. When did you actually turn the game off?
4-0, mm-hmm. And then circled back just to make sure nothing crazy happened.
It was major pull the plug and then check monitor on my phone and make sure that nothing crazy was going on. So that shows you what a dud that game was. We're talking about a conference final or a semis or whatever we want to call it that I was just completely checked out of halfway through. And I think that speaks to probably how good Andre Vasilevsky is, because a team gets down by 3 or 4 goals and you're like, all right, you can put this one on ice. It's done. But the logical move is that we're going to see another 2-1 Islanders win.
Islanders.
But that's also conventional wisdom at this point. Like I know part of it's like we've seen it happen enough where we should be prepared for it. But we also haven't seen many 8-0 games. Like is this finally the end of the road for the Islanders? Will I finally be proven correct in my desire to pick against them in every series they've played for the last 4 years or whatever?
Here's the thing that I've noticed about the Lightning and over the last couple of years is that they've gotten to the point these great teams get where they're pretty inflappable. Like they can lose games, they can get down in the series. It doesn't matter. There's no choking. They've already choked or whatever with that Columbus series. So the worst that could ever happen to them already happened. And in some sense, that's freeing, right? At that point, you can just lean into whatever you are. And I think the Lightning, I think that is a position of strength. That's a great place to be. We've seen it. I've seen some recent years teams go through that. All those great teams get to that point where you can just tell. Like they lose a game and they're like, yeah, that's playoff hockey. You're going to lose games and you're going to get down in a series. And you just keep on trucking. And the Lightning are definitely at that point. And at some point, these other teams, Colorado will get there. These other good young teams are just not in that part of the cycle. But man, these Lightning team definitely is.
Yeah, it's easy to have faith in your ability to bounce back whenever Steven Stamkos is your fourth best forward or wherever he is at this point. And that's no knock on Stamkos. He scored twice last night. I mean, it just speaks to the depth that's on that team. And when you're working with such an insanely talented group that, oh, by the way, just won a Stanley Cup and hasn't lost a series since that catastrophe against the Blue Jackets and blah, blah. You should be cocky. You should have a ton of faith in your ability to bounce back from adversity or whatever you want to call it. Of course, this is how they play. They have no reason not to.
I want to go big picture with the Lightning because you mentioned Stamkos coming in, scores a couple goals, and really, like it almost seems like whatever he does is bonus at this point. And I hate to, like he's a Hall of Fame player. And it's like, oh yeah, Stamkos is contributing to the, that's
nice.
Good for him. And so I looked it up because they had mentioned on the broadcast that after the first one was his 30th career playoff goal. And I'm like, okay, where does that slot him all time? And, I'm always curious about this stuff. And at that point, that had pulled him even with teammate Tyler Johnson for career playoff goals. Which I would have lost that bet. And I know Tyler Johnson has had some really good playoff runs and has been, you know, but whatever. And then he scores again. And now it's like, okay, you know, if he keeps going, he might catch, you know, Killorn. And it's like, that's wild to me. So that poses a question. When you think about the Lightning, who in this, in their run is now going, they're going on several years, going back to the trip to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Blackhawks. Yeah, like, who is the most indispensable out of them?
6 years ago, by the way.
Yeah, that's, I know. So we're on a 6 or 7 year mm-hmm. stretch here. In your mind, it's not Stamkos, which is wild to say because he's such a great player, Olympian, etc. Is he Olympian? Was he Olympian? Great player, Hall of Famer. Who do you think is the most indispensable out of this?
Braden Point.
Yeah.
Braden Point. It's easy.
Not Vasilevsky? Not Hedman?
Again, like I always just sort of put goalies off in their own separate little table because they're the most it's the most important position on the ice.
Like so you, we can yeah almost, that's always the default.
Yeah, right. Because every cup team the goalie is the most important player on.
Yeah.
Almost definitionally. So yes, this is a lot of this is because of Vasilevsky, absolutely. But it's Braden Point. He's hitting historic levels. Like he's by the end of all this, he's going to be third all time in goals among players 25 or younger, which is crazy. I mean, he scores every night. It's Braden Point.
It's Braden Point. So moving up the charts as we climb. So Alex Killorn has 34 career playoff goals.
I knew that you were going to stump hard for Killorn. I get it.
No. I'm just pointing out facts. Mm-hmm. Braden Point's probably the right answer because once he became Braden Point, that's when they became the powerhouse, yeah. Right? You know, Hedman and Vasilevsky were around and. And, you know, early on, Ben Bishop was getting starts. And so you could say the one thing I would say about Vasilevsky, you know, and they kept trotting that record out yesterday is that his record after losses, like it's ridiculous. And I wish I had the stat right now, but you want him in goal after coming off a loss. He just seems to clamp down. But I'm with you. Like he is, you know, maybe if we remove him from the equation. So we're moving up. Alex Killorn. 34. Then we go up. Braden Point is at, this is 128 all time in the NHL. And Braden Point's not a particularly old fella. And he's
25 years old.
He's 25 years old. He is now at 36 career playoff goals, or 35, excuse me, in 60 games. So you were wrong. He doesn't score every game, but every other?
He scores every 1.7 games he scores or whatever.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So he's got, you know,
it's historic, you know, elite tier stuff from him. Like I said, he's third or fourth all time in goals and guys under 25. I know that's a weird cherry picking stat because he is 25 years old.
Yeah. I feel like it's like, but you could. You know, under
but in terms of guy, I mean the upshot there is that he is starting his career at an ultra his playoff career at an ultra elite level, and whether he keeps it up, you know, remains to be seen, but he's played a lot of playoff games for a young guy and he's scored a ton of goals at a Rushmore kind of pace. It's amazing.
You know, and now he is at 35 career playoff goals. He's pulled even with, you know, Pavel Bure, Alex Delvecchio, some Pierre Turgeon, some crazy, you know, some all timers, Brad Park, and like this, like, but actually he is now one behind Nicklas Backstrom. So, I mean, think about how many playoff games Nicklas Backstrom has played and he's 1,000 years old now. He's played 133 games and Point is...
Old man Nick Backstrom is a tough one for me to stomach.
I've come to grips with being old. I think you're still not there.
I'm close. Are you? I'm close enough. Almost.
Yeah. What was the breaking point for you?
I think whenever Crosby started to get gray hair and kind of be treated as like an elder statesman over the last couple years, that's when I was like, okay, I'm officially I'm officially past it because he's a little bit younger than me. I was in college when he got drafted and blah blah. Like that's like that group of players when they really start aging out. The 05 draft is when I'm going to be like, all right, you can just put me in the ground now.
So yeah, he's done all this in 60 games. The one guy he trails is Andre Palat, has 36.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Nope.
That's interesting that he's tops there. And I know he had.
Oh, I lied. God. I lied. I didn't go to the right page. There's still somebody above him. This is wild. So we've just rattled off guys. We're at like five guys above Stamkos at this point. Kucherov, I forgot about. Oh, by the way, when we're talking about most important players in their runs, we didn't even mention, you know, the Hart Trophy, Nikita Kucherov. 41 goals to lead the Lightning career.
Hey, how many other players in NHL history have a playoff goal streak of 8 games or more? Besides Braden Point. How many?
Probably not many. Do you know? I feel like you know this answer.
I know the answer.
Sent you the 2?
1. Mm. It's Reggie Leach for the Flyers in 76.
Yeah. It's really unbelievable what he's doing. And I think your answer is the right answer. So, and I don't want to spend the first segment on Braden Point, but we can. It created a debate. Thomas Drantz, colleague at The Athletic out of Vancouver. I love Drantzer. He loves to mix it up on Twitter. And he's like, well, maybe this will finally put an end to small, you know, you need to be a big and heavy in the playoffs. And, you know, he said maybe Braden Point's success will end it. Of course it won't because... Yeah. History, there's a long history of smallish players having success in the playoffs. Like, he's not the first. You know, where the Blackhawks' dominance was carried by Patrick Kane for long stretches, and he's not a large player.
Those narratives on each side last for one game. Like, if the Lightning close out this series and Blake Coleman has a goal or whatever, like one of the more physical, yeah, gritty dudes that they went out and traded for last year, then it resets and we start doing it again. If it's Vegas Tampa in a final and that's like,
which I at this point, that's what we need it to be, right?
Selfishly, it's what I want for sure. I mean, like I think stylistically that makes sense. I think from a narrative standpoint, which is something we all pay attention to, whether we want to admit it or not, I think it makes sense. Yeah, but if that happens, everybody is going to dig in. Everybody on either side of the skill versus will debate is going to dig in, and it's going to be fun. But yeah, I mean, I agree with Drantz. Like, I'll take faster skilled guys over guys who are just being big for big sake. But the debate's never going to end. It's actually going to restart tomorrow night.
Oh, can't wait! Like, it's to me, this is the same as the analytics debate in that the answer is it's both. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want skilled small players who aren't going to battle and go into the tough area. You know what I mean? Braden Point's great because he's a feisty competitor that does whatever it takes to win and goes wherever he has to. Like,
he's a complete hockey player. It's a debate that always kind of exists on a low level here in Pittsburgh because of how small and skilled and set in their ways that team is from a roster construction standpoint, because you got Jake Ensel and you got Brian Rust and you got Sidney Crosby and blah, blah, blah. And that's how they won 2 cups. You know, I what I always say is like, just pick one thing and be good at it. Like, don't try to find like a round peg like Ryan Reeves and try to throw him in a lineup just because you want to say that you have a big guy. Like, that can throw off a lot of different stuff. Being big for the sake of being big doesn't make any sense. Like, you're not trying to tick boxes there and say like, well, okay, we like this team. Do we like them? We'd like them a lot more if they're a 1-6-3 guy on the third line. I think if you have an identity when it comes to team building, You know, that's what's important. Not just saying we need something because we feel like we need it.
I think just there's still like this list is a good example. There are still guys that have success in the playoffs. For you know, it's a different game. And there's you watch how these games are called, and we've talked ad nauseum about them. It's a different game, and there's you know there's a reason Palat is good in the playoffs and Killorn, and they're you know not lighting the world on fire during the regular season. And you know, you could argue to counter what you said though, Sean. Like Pat Maroon almost feels like the let's plug in a big guy, and you know who maybe isn't part of our identity, and that's worked out really well for Tampa.
Right. But what worked out more was Braden Point turning into the best playoff goal scorer of his generation and having a Vezina winner
or Pat Maroon.
It could be Pat Maroon.
Agree to disagree. All right, before we get to John Vogel, who's on, I don't want to make John wait. My best friend, Pat Maroon. I wanted to talk quickly because I thought of you when Robin Lehner copped to basically doom scrolling. You know, he gets the nod. Pete DeBoer, who I've always liked Pete DeBoer because he is not afraid to make the tough call. He's got guts as a coach, and he goes with Robin Lehner, which I – of course, thought was the right call. I didn't say anything on Twitter or express that to anybody beforehand. But
no,
you texted
me. I have the evidence.
I said, great, what a smart decision.
Now, well, I won't be sharing it with anybody out of respect for you.
Thank you. That's a private conversation. But I'll share. I said that Robin Lehner will probably win this in overtime for Vegas. Great gutsy move by Pete DeBoer. I just like the idea that like Robin Lehner's so online and so present he was responding like who did he respond to? Oh, Keith Olbermann tweeted like terrible decision. And here's Robin Lehner after the game with a panda swimming in a pond like gif. And I'm like, oh, could you love Robin Lehner anymore?
He was one step away from just picking random Twitter folks with like – like and then there was some guy in his wearing sunglasses in his avatar, and he said that DeBoer did it again. Like he was the axe grinding on display. There was just wild. It was very relatable. As someone who's terminally online, and also like maybe a little. I don't know if that's exactly what you want from your goaltender after a win or a loss, but I don't know, man. It was funny to hear.
I loved it. It only works because he won. Like had he lost, and we would be like, you should not have your phone out
throw your phone in a river, Robin Lehner, like you're. This is melting your brain.
Be a pro. That's right. Like like that's the beauty of hockey is that we just like whatever happens, then we just latch on to whatever, you know, that we're like, that's great. You can get motivation from Twitter. What I want to know, you had kind of a benign tweet about Robin Lehner starting. If I remember correctly, it was just like, I forgot what it was. It wasn't critical, but it was like, hey, this is happening. And I was curious if Robin Lehner took any offense to yours. Do you think your tweet served
specifically?
Him
yeah, I think I am among Robin Lehner's greatest haters. Clearly, and he did this for me. No, I was more talking about the Fleury end of things. Honestly, that's more what I was referencing. Just because, you know, we've seen this from it all. You know, as someone who is here for all of it, and you know the Fleury meltdowns of 2012 and 2013 and 2014. I mean, that guy's career just fascinates me to no end. To see it kind of get this new chapter, and who knows what happens, you know, with the Lehner math debate. I'm just continually fascinated by the twists that guy's career have taken.
So, I mean, you've covered Marc-Andre Fleury a long time. First of all, I just want to say the whole point of them having two good goalies, like this was part of their strength going into the playoffs. It's like they have two good goalies. They're going to use them. You can rest a guy. Like it's not a strength if you don't use it. So like this is all part of the plan for Vegas. In retrospect, you know, Fleury has the gaffe. It made perfect sense. And maybe you don't like it because highlights, or maybe you feel like you're blaming Marc-Andre Fleury or something, but like that's why you have these two goalies. So you can play them both.
That can't be the concern or the overall goal at this point. Like, you're trying to win games. You're not trying to, you know, keep Marc-Andre Fleury content and happy and whatever. But what I will say about him is, you know, it's kind of classic Fleury stuff where in their losses, he's been terrible. You know, he had the gaffe before. He's lost six games as a starter. One of them he was great in. The others have been, you know, 769 save percentage, 875 save percentage, 88. Like, he's, you know that maybe there's going to be a couple times per series where he has a dud. And I think it makes sense for DeBoer, if nothing else, to try to head that off at the pass. Because again, you know, they're playing a lot of games. These guys aren't used to playing every other day for one consecutive month. So I'm with you, absolutely. If you don't use Robin Leonard in a game like that one, what's the point in even having
him? Yeah, you don't even, and you're not using his strength. It'd be like having, you know, a really good second line center and be like, yeah, we're just gonna sit, we're gonna scratch him.
Don't bother.
Don't bother. We don't need him. All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk to John Vogel about. I feel like we could talk Sabres every single episode in this. We've
come close.
We've come close.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we're now bringing John Vogel. And so before we went to break, I meant to ask Sean, and now I can ask Sean too, because John covered Robin Leonard in Buffalo, who we're going to probably know by the time this episode drops. So we're not like breaking news or even debating it really, but I want everyone on the record, since I was the only one who came out in defense of Robin Leonard before the last game privately. Who starts next game and why?
Privately and secretly.
Privately, of course. we'll start with John. John, who are you going with in the next game?
I think Robin earned one more. You talked a little about the gaffe from the previous game, and Robin just came out and played a solid, impressive game. I think he gets one more shot, and then win or lose, I think maybe Marc-Andre comes in the next one. That's just my personal thought.
Sean,
can you do that? Can you play Leonard, and if he wins, you still go back to Fleury? Like, I feel like playing Leonard for a second game is the sort of tacit acknowledgement that, like, he's the default going forward, which I don't necessarily have a problem with, but...
When I go back to 06, the Sabres were playing in the Eastern Conference Finals in Carolina. They were going back and forth between Ward and I think it was Gerber. Was that the one? But they had two goalies going back and forth, and whether they won or lost, they went back to Ward. So I think that's kind of how this will work out, where it is. It's Fleury's team at the moment, so I'll give Leonard one more because he earned it, and then go back to Fleury.
I'm sold.
Yeah.
It's simple.
We're all on board with that plan. Marc-Andre Fleury was my pre-playoff Conn Smythe pick. So
I think, like,
that's on the record.
That's the main reason I want him to draw in, so because I'm also on record as saying he's going to win it. He's going to win a Conn Smythe.
So he does need to play in order to win the Conn Smythe.
Personal bias wins out on this choice.
As always. All right. So, John, I think we were talking about you on the pod last week. Like, I feel so bad for how much work you've had to do nonstop. This is, you know, it's June 22nd as we record this. A lot of beat writers are disappearing just for a breather. And you've been not only just covering the team, but like a news watch. It's fun because we all like the news and we like to chase it, but it's exhausting. I've been there as a writer. Like, what has this year been like for you?
Yeah, there's been some times where it was, oh man, it's just never going to stop. This is it's my 19th season, and I've only covered four playoff teams. So we know I've seen a lot of bad things happen in Buffalo in the last two decades. But this year topped it all. I mean, everything just from playing bad hockey after finally having some expectations, bringing in Taylor Hall, bringing in Eric Staal. You think, all right, they might be decent. They probably won't make the playoffs, but they can contend. And then they're worse than the tank teams. They were just absolutely terrible. Then the NHL throws them into the COVID soup. That was a disaster.
About that.
Yeah. They knew New Jersey had a few players. Go play anyway. The Sabres got it shut down for 2 weeks. Then they come back. Ralph Kruger couldn't coach at all, but it still took forever to fire fire him. The fans were in revolt. Jack gets hurt. Now season's over. Jack's ready to get out. Sam Reinhardt's probably going too. Rasmus Ristolainen. They don't have any goalies signed for next year. They don't have a coach at the moment. So yeah, there's a few things going on.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know where to start with all that. I would say this podcast is firmly in the Don Granato. Like we've thrown all objectivity aside. We're, I think, team Don Granato at this point. We had him on. He was great. I've always like he always seems like he's in terms of working with young players, and that's what Buffalo needs. Keeping an upbeat attitude. It seems like a nice fit. Can you give any update on where things stand? I know these are tough right now. And then where are you at on that?
Yeah, I think it's still 50-50 that it's his job. The only reason it's not higher is the Pegulas have shown a tendency to fall for things at times. So someone might come in and just, hey, they have a great Trick interview. Him. Someone might come in, have a great interview, and that's it. They're now the front runner. So I'm not going higher than 50-50 on Don at the moment, but he was fantastic both for us and for the team.
Yeah.
For us, I just want to relate a story that the Sabres PR guy told me. It was after one of his news conferences that wrapped up, and he's like, oh, should I call so-and-so? I don't really like the answer I gave him. I think I could do a little better.
Oh my God.
You don't hear that too often from a coach. That's
my goodness.
Yeah.
I hope the answer was yes. Call that person.
Absolutely not. Do not
start that president.
Do not open this door, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
But the team was just completely different. I mean, a little bit's hard to tell because I think anybody had stepped in for Ralph, they would have made it been an improvement. But Don was definitely just a whole new team. And he got more out of Casey Mittelstadt and Tage mm-hmm. Thompson and the guys that you needed more out of. And I think that's his big thing going forward. That's why I think he's the front runner. But like I said, still just 50-50 at the moment because Kevin Adams is going to talk to everyone and wants to talk to everyone just as he's new at this. He wants to learn some other ideas. And yeah, he's talked with college guys, AHL guys, European guys, and NHL guys. So he's not done yet, I don't think.
Do they end up where they are with Eichel no matter what? Like, I know everyone, the surgery thing, that's a big deal. Certainly seems like the straw that broke the camel's back and whatever. But even if that doesn't happen, are we spending the offseason talking about a Jack Eichel trade being certain no matter what? Like, was that just an inevitability based on the way the last year or two went?
I actually think no in this case. The injury really, really topped it. Now, obviously, after last season or the previous season, Jack was fed up. He had a MVP caliber season. The team wasn't getting any better. So, yeah, he was sick and tired of losing. But this year he came out and there were some injuries. But as he said, he scored 2 goals. So he was more embarrassed than mad this year. So I think if he had just been able to get the surgery, get healthy, he would have been willing to come in and prove himself and stick around. But the surgery was a big thing. I mean, it's his body and he's just convinced. I've talked with a few people in his camp and every neurosurgeon that he's talked to, they are convinced he gets this. He's ready to go in 2 months. He's ready just for the rest of his life. He wouldn't have to worry about it. And the fact that he can't get it done is just it's over, basically.
Mm. That's unbelievable. So, John, you wrote a great piece for The Athletic that really broke down the assets potential suitors have. I think this was last week in a potential Jack Eichel trade. When you went through that process, was there a team that you said, and I've kind of done this a bit too, and I've got my answer, but was there a team where you're like, this really makes sense, in terms of what the Sabres need in lining things up and what they have. When you went through that process, did anything jump out?
Yeah, there were 6 teams listed. We had LA, Minnesota, Anaheim, Columbus, Philly, and the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And the 3 that I think are at the top would be LA, Minnesota, and Anaheim. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of things from all those teams that could really fit what Buffalo has. If you trade Jack Eichel, you're going to need a center.
Yes.
Obviously it doesn't have to be an elite center, but you need a center, step into the lineup. You're going to need some prospects, and you would like someone that the fans can embrace. That's going to be a big thing. There's once Jack's gone, he's the face of the franchise for the last few years. There's no one really to step in. Dylan Cousins might be that guy in a little while, but you want someone that the fans can really grasp onto and say, hey, this guy is going to be it. And there are some prospects in LA, Minnesota, Anaheim that might have those. And then you throw in the number 8 pick from LA and the number 3 pick in Anaheim. And I think there's some deals there that could be made.
Yeah. Like, to me, it's the Kings. I feel like it just, so the one thing, you know, people always want to do when they're, you know, especially the fans, they put together these packages or whatever, and they never include like 5 of the best prospects or whatever. Like, there's like the Sabres have to give up Jack Eichel, but the Rangers don't have to give up anybody they've taken in the first 3 rounds. But to your point, with the Kings, when you look at what the Kings have, you factor, they have the high end prospects that they've been gathering, Quinton Byfields, Alex Turcotte, that would certainly qualify under player fan can rally around and play center. So that, you know, you have 2 players there where really, like, you could get excited about if you're a Sabres fan as a building block. You have the high pick. I think what jumps out the most is they have a need to get, like, they don't want to wait in LA. Like, they have a need to get good pretty quickly here, where you don't want to necessarily wait 5 years for Turcotte to be a number one center. Because you've got Drew Doughty and you've got Anze Kopitar sitting there getting older.
And they're also in a division. They're back to being in a division next year that is not that good. It's going to be there. It's going to be there for them to make some hay and potentially finish second or third. So they can jump up.
Like, how, and you don't have to give up both of those guys. So you can theoretically put together a really good deal for the Sabres for Jack Eichel, and still, you know, and you're coming out with Eichel, Kopitar, and maybe still Turcotte down the middle. In if you send Byfield the other way. Doughty on D, like, you're all of a sudden you're loaded, and it just makes so much sense where they can make a deal that works for everybody. Because I think, you know, everyone says when you're trading Jack Eichel, you can't win the deal. I think the Sabres can actually win a deal, and it works, still works for the Kings. So that's my conclusion there.
Yeah. There's always a secondary thing with LA. They're in a market where stars matter. We got the Olympics coming up. They can market Jack Eichel as Mr. USA hockey going to the Olympics. Yes. I mean, it's a city where stars matter. You got LeBron, you got Mike Trout, teams need the big stars in that city, and that's Jack going there. They could market that very well.
The other thing I look at is GMs that maybe are under pressure or some heat. Like, I think Rob Blake is, you know, he's been at it a bit there in LA. Like, it's time to turn the corner there. So there's some heat. Bob Murray is a good one. Like, Bob Murray, at least from the fan perspective, I think fans have just, you know, they've reached a point where they have had it. Like, we do those fan surveys at The Athletic, and Eric Stevens has done a great job kind of getting the pulse of Ducks fans. And I think there's a high level of frustration there. And Bob Murray has shown a tendency to make a big deal. Like, he is a guy that likes to make trades. The wild card to me is Jarmo Kekalainen. We've talked about a bit about him. He's always in the mix for something. Like he is... I just don't see they need centers. And so how does that work? Yeah. I don't know.
The fit on a return doesn't make sense for I shouldn't say that. It doesn't make as much sense for the Blue Jackets as it does for like the Kings and the Ducks, where you have a Byfield or a Turcotte or a Trevor Zegras or whatever, like those guys who you can send back as actual center pieces. That guy doesn't exist in Columbus, because if he did, then they wouldn't be in the discussion at all. Yeah. So yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, I could sit here and think about it for, you know, a half hour every day, like Jack Eichel trade destinations.
Yeah, the problem with Columbus, when you look at it, they have the number 5 pick, which is nice, but but the problem is most of their assets that they would send here are guys who are NHL guys. You can maybe get Line A, you can get one of the goalies, and the Sabres don't need that at the moment. They're not ready to win next year. They would need to start building a little more, and those guys don't help that cause.
It's interesting that Minnie is in the mix for you, was in your top 3, and because that's a team that is a bit like Columbus, perennially in the search of a center. But you saw a fit there.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a lot of people in town that really like Marco Rossi.
Yeah.
The health thing, so that's a little bit. Matthew Boldy, just coming out of college, is already excelling in the AHL. That's a possibility. And Kevin Fiala's young. He's only 24. I know, talking with Russo, there's obviously going to be a lot of money crunch there. So he'd be here for a few years at least. Like, he fits in that thing where he's an NHL guy and maybe they want a little younger, but yeah. He's only 24. You're getting him for at least a few years and then you can move him if you need to.
I wanted to touch on Sam Reinhart because he's just as interesting a player in terms of potential return or a trade. And I have noticed a bit of a shift amongst fans that are saying, Jack Eichel's probably not realistic. Sam Reinhart's the guy to target out of Buffalo. Where do you see that? How do you see that playing out with Sam Reinhart?
Yeah, he's 1 year away from UFA. He's not going to sign a long-term deal. So yeah, now's the time to move him. I mean, you're overhauling the franchise. You can't keep him around just on a one-year deal and then try and move him at the deadline or anything. So yeah, it's time to move him. He's always been a solid goal scorer. He's always proven himself to be a complementary player. He was Jack's wingman. He was Ryan O'Reilly's wingman. But when Don Granato took over, he moved him to center basically because he had no choice, and he excelled. He had 10 goals down the stretch. He just was performing both ends. He was drafted as a center. So people are saying, why do we wait 6 years to try this? But that's the Buffalo way, apparently. but yeah, he's really proven he can be he can play two positions. He's a solid two-way guy. He's every year, 24 goals. I mean, that's just pencil it down. This year was a little more. So yeah, I mean, there should be interest in him. And if Jack weren't on the market, this Sam would be one guy that, hey, everyone should be looking at.
Yeah, there'd be a lot more juice around him. Like, he's still young. It can play, like you said, multiple positions. That pedigree that GMs love, number two overall pick in 2014.
I can't believe we're talking about Sam Reinhart, like, potentially hitting UFA. Like, he's about to have been in the league for 7 years. Like, that's crazy to me. We were talking about stuff that makes you feel old. I think that's towards the top. Like, my God.
This is the portion where Sean comes to grips with his age again.
Yeah, I'm just gonna stare out the window and think for the next 30 seconds about Sam Reinhart being in year 7.
Oh my goodness, that 2014 draft, like, that doesn't, like, you know, for those of us who are old, it doesn't seem that long ago with all the Dreisaitl and Ekblad and all those players. Oh man, so John, the people, of course, I feel the worst for are the fans in Buffalo, because you're right. Like, the best return here is the best smart thing to do here is to load up on young players to try to get that top of the draft pick. But now you're just sending it back a few years. Is there any case to be made of trying to go to maybe the Columbus route and getting players who are NHL ready so you can potentially not have the fans wait another 5 years for a playoff berth?
I don't think, no, I think fans are, there's a little problem with the fact that prospects, they've seen so many in the last decade.
That's not right. Panic. How do you sell this?
Everyone talked about, oh, they got the number one pick. People should be excited. People aren't really all that excited at the moment just because they've seen a lot of prospects come and go. And the Sabres a few years back, they had it was called the blueprint. They printed out this fancy thing, sent it to season ticket holders. These guys are coming. This is so-and-so ranked them at number 15. They're going to be great. And two or three of them made it maybe. And then, so prospect, it's weird. They're in a tough spot where no one's excited about prospects. They're not excited about the guys who are on the team. But I think the fans are smart enough to know that they can't just fix this overnight. Dahlin's 21. Cousins is 20. They know it's going to take a few years. They've seen with Jack and Sam that it takes a few years to get a team around them. So unfortunately, fans, as beaten down as they are, they know it's still going to be a few more years and that shouldn't be rushed.
Like, imagine if they come out of this with you make your deals and you come out of this and you have Owen Power and Dahlin on the back end. You have Cousins and Byfield and whoever you get at the top of the draft with another they could be so loaded. And I know, and fans don't want to hear that, but I do think, like, there's, and maybe all these guys don't pan out, but you know, Mittelstadt could still be really good. Like, that's not out of the equation here. I don't know. I think there's a scenario here where the Sabres end up in really good shape, and they're like the next Colorado Avalanche or something.
Yeah, what they have to do is, it's kind of a leading to, they got to get everybody in that 21 to 24 range right now, in 3 years they're ready to go. There's no reason to get a guy who's 27 now and then he's 30 when these guys are finally in their prime. They just there's some LA deals that could really really tantalize
you people. Keep looking at that list and you're like, that's the one that makes sense, even if it's Turcotte. Like I think Byfield's, you know, I don't want to say the pipe dream because that makes it sound like it's impossible, but that's a Byfield package is as good as it gets. Like that's the goal for every fan, I'm sure. But I mean, even if you have Turcotte plus, I don't know. That's close. It makes more sense than anything else. I'll say that.
Yeah. So, John, we touched on Owen Power just a bit. I mean, that seems to be the guy at the top of this draft. Have you been able to kind of familiarize yourself with his game, or how do you see that fit in terms of what Buffalo needs?
I saw a little bit of the World Championships when he was over there. There was good moments for sure. That's the other thing. The Sabres, they've got a lot of defensive prospects. So that's kind of why, that's another reason why people aren't overly excited about the number one draft. He's the best guy. You got to take the best guy. It's the best asset out there. But you've got Dahlin. They drafted Matthias Samuelsson at the top of the second round in the Dahlin draft. They drafted Ryan Johnson of University of Minnesota in the first round. They've got Jacob Bryson, who was a rookie this year and was one of their better players. So they've got young defensemen. So that's another reason why. But hey, add this guy and you could have a really one of the best NHL's best defense corps in a few years.
Okay, hear me out on this last thought. Why not listen on Rasmus Dahlin for all the reasons you just said?
That might take me a second.
just say he's not available, but you blow me away. Blow me away, somebody.
There were flashes. I think you could sell part of the fan base on that. For sure, because he was so hyped, and he hasn't quite lived up to it yet. But he's playing in a position that most guys haven't even played before. At that age. But other people see the flashes. There are things he does that people haven't seen in this town since Phil Housley. So you hope that, you hope the next few years that just keeps growing. And he really blossomed under Don Granato. So if you keep Don, you really want to keep Rasmus. And so I wouldn't quite listen, but as you said, if you get blown away, what are you going to do?
Well, John, I hope you're able to take a weekend or something at some point. I feel for what you're going through. I mean, it's fun, but geez.
Yeah, I was just the best man in a wedding Saturday, so I'm a little. I had a good weekend, so we're a little refreshed now. Yeah.
Are you still wearing the tuxedo? You know, I see a collar.
I didn't return it yet. It was a slow move in.
Awesome. Well, John, thanks for doing this. Best of luck. I'm sure we'll hopefully have you back to talk about what happened. But
I'm sure there's a lot coming. Yes. Yeah,
keep up the great work. You've been killing it this year. Thanks for doing this.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
John, not only has he been busy, it's been fun to read him because he has a bit of a sharp edge to his writing. Yeah. You could see slightly the Pegula sometimes gets tricked. Like he's not afraid to carve, and I like that out of a beaver.
He steers into turns. I respect it.
It's awesome. What a year he's gonna have. Offseason he's gonna have. It's gonna be busy, and I'm glad we were able to solve some of it for Buffalo. If they just would listen to our advice,
it is fun. It's fun to imagine the Pegula is getting tricked. Some guy comes in and
Nick's shiny some coach. Guy
comes in and is doing three card money on Terry's desk. He's like, make me the coach, please. God.
All right, let's throw it a break and we'll come back. I think we've got a couple topics we haven't hit on that we want to, so let's take a break and then we're gonna finish really strong here.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Oh, we've got hot Matthew Tkachuk rumors, my friend.
Yes, the best kind.
It was a big night. Shane O'Brien said on a Steve Kallias podcast that maybe kind of sort of Matthew Tkachuk might be sort of contemplating asking for his way out of Calgary. And that
sounds definitive.
It's not a huge surprise because we know stuff there went sideways late and we'd heard reports, whether it's from Elliot Friedman or from Haley Salvian, that stuff certainly could have been better in Calgary by the end there. So we knew that there were some rumblings. That's a core, you know, built around Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, and they've just continually underachieved. We saw Sam Bennett moved at the deadline. I mean, there's some moving parts in Calgary right now. So it's not a surprise to see Matthew Tkachuk's name pop up and stuff like that. It's not a surprise, mainly because everyone, I think, is anticipating him and Brady playing together eventually, because they're really tight. It just seems like an inevitability at some point down the road, you know, that they're going to end up together.
Matthew, in St. Louis.
You swipe my genius idea out from under me.
Oh, that's where you were headed? Sorry. Go ahead.
Let's make it happen. Let's make it concrete. Matthew Tkachuk's heading into the last year of his deal. He's got a $7 million cap hit. He's got a huge base salary that the Flames paid him because they signed him to one of those funky bridge deals. Send him to St. Louis. Who cares what it costs? He can keep the house warm for Brady in a couple years. Let's reunite the current first family of American hockey in the great American city of St. Louis. Or just send Tkachuk to the Rangers. Either or. Let's make
either
it happen.
One works for me.
Doesn't.
I agree. There are too many Americans just toiling away in Canada right now.
It's true.
It's true. Austin Matthews, get him out of Toronto.
Here's why when I saw someone float a ridiculous Matthew Tkachuk for Jake Guentzel trade last night.
Do it.
No, we don't want that to happen because we don't want Jake Guentzel to end up in Calgary.
Great point.
It's a zero sum American swap. Like we got to keep Jake Guentzel in the States. We got to bring both Tkachuks ideally here in one way or another. And I think that process starts today.
Okay, great. I wanted to weigh in. Yesterday news emerged that Tom Kervers had died from lung cancer, and Tom Kervers, I hope people listening to this were able to see that there was a moment of silence during the Lightning game, and you know they recognized him as somebody who was a big part of building that team. I mean, we you know, he had a long stretch as a AGM in Tampa, and during the time when all of these players we talked about at the start of this podcast were acquired, and he's just one of those people that you never heard about, right? Like he just quietly behind the scenes worked really hard, was influential in building a powerhouse in Tampa, had an important voice in the Minnesota front office. But, you know, why that news hit me personally is because and I know we say this every time someone dies, I feel like, but Tom Kervers might have been the best guy to run into, to cross paths with in an arena or a hotel lobby. Like just a warm, friendly conversation every single time. And like, you know, he didn't, like, who am I to know anybody in the game? And he just would stop and talk and remembered everybody and remembered what you were into. He knew I'm the complete dork who like has a book, nose in his book at all times. And we would sit and he would give me two or three book recommendations every time we talked. And it's just, you know, he was 58 years old, died from lung cancer. And it's heartbreaking because I barely know him and I was sad to hear, like, just, you know, you hear that news and it's crushing. I'm at, like, people that were in his life, I just was really thinking about them because just a quality guy that the outpouring yesterday was nonstop and seemed very sincere. And I can tell you from my point of view, it was very sincere. And so I wanted to highlight, you know, here is a guy that, you know, impacted the University of Minnesota Duluth, just wherever he went, made an impact. And he wasn't a huge name. Like Tom Curvers isn't somebody that, you know, wasn't thrown around as the next great GM for whatever reason. He just quietly did his thing. And there's those people in hockey. And I hate that it took him dying for us to have this conversation, but I'm glad that he's getting his due.
Yeah, I only know Tom Curvers from stuff you've told me about him over the years. Like I remember him popping up in reporting that you did 10 years ago when we last worked together, you know, just coming up in random stories. And yeah, I knew of him through you, and I knew how, you know, fond you were of him and what a great guy he sounded like. So yeah, it's a shame. It's a loss. It always is.
Yeah. And so to make a super clunky transition, but Scott Burnside was one of the people that first introduced me to Tom. And you know, Scott is, as you know, Sean, is like the cruise director of the hockey space. Not just media, but with scouts. And he's organizing whatever's happening after the game. And so like Scott's got that same heart. Like I think he introduced me to Tom and was like, hey, Craig likes to read. You guys both like to read. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, walked away and that started. And Scott... That's what makes Scott such a that's why we love him, makes him such a great podcast host. This is my clunky transition, but it's true. You know, it's why, you know, the two-man advantage, him and Pierre, it's just like sitting down at a bar and listening to them. And they've got Rod Brindamore on their pod, and I just wanted to highlight that. People should listen to that.
Also, Scotty wrote one of my favorite things the last week or so, his story about his Father's Day story that ran a couple days ago. I love that. Just stories. You know, lessons from everybody across hockey about stuff their dads taught them, whether it's Cammy Granato or Sidney Crosby or whatever. I thought that was a great read from a few days ago. And I think that shows the kind of stuff that Scotty really does well, because he's got this Rolodex that is just unbeatable, and he gets people to open up about, you know, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, those guys are the best.
Also in the Athletic Hockey Show, Max Baltman and Corey Priman are on Friday. I think, not that I'm obsessed with our numbers, but they might have beat us last week in the ratings. And I would like to thank everyone listening to this, because we have come out strong as the new kid in the week. But Max and Corey I keep looking at Haley and Ian, but they may be the arch rivals. We've been way too nice to Max on this podcast.
It's Priman season, baby. This is what he does. It's Max. It's Max coming in. Coming in a close second. Yeah, man. Yeah. Prospect. So, can't spell prospect without Priman. Is that good? Right? Is that good? I think it's good.
I think you can, though.
It was good.
You can't spell prospects without pra?
Without Priman, prospects are just specs.
Wow. I think that...
It tracks.
I think it tracks. That's really good. That's really good, Sean. That's on Friday. Listen to those two. I also wanted to, I'm going to use this time now to highlight comments, not just say go into the Athletic app and comment on our podcast. We are going to talk about the comments, because people are doing it and I love it. And Joel B, last week, people were putting lists of words that we were banning from this podcast. Galaxy brain. I noticed Sean made it through without...
Almost said it. It today. I caught myself. Oh, yes.
Okay. Commenter from last week called us out on using galaxy brain. We banned it. We banned it completely. So Joel B, and I think we had another... And I forget what the other phrase. I should be writing these down. I have a big whiteboard next to me here in my home.
It might have been at the end of the day. Is that possible?
Well, So Joel B submitted... on the comment section of our last podcast, which you can get in the Athletic app, I would submit at the end of the day as another banned phrase. Not sure how much you guys use it. I don't think I do.
Not much.
But that makes it much easier for us to ban. His second part, though, is one of my crutches. He says, starting a sentence with, yeah, no. Like you go, you agree, and then you go, no, yeah, no. Like I do that. I can hear myself doing that.
Not one of those. I have plenty of other horrible vocal tics and habits that I'm always trying to break. But yeah, no, is not one of them. I think the one that I do still is say, like I said, I preface.
If you like I said as a media member, like we get it from athletes, I think it's terrible.
like I said before, something that I didn't even say. I'm like, no. Like, my favorite, like I didn't say.
Like I didn't, like I said, my favorite, like I said, moment ever came, and I think you and I have talked about this, a long time ago during an Olympic orientation camp. Ryan Suter comes out as like the first player available at this camp we just showed up at. So we're all fresh. We're all, hey, it's the middle of the summer. We're talking Olympics. We're excited. Hey, Ryan, how you doing? First question. Hey, Ryan, what do you think of the Americans this year? Whatever the dumb first question was. Like I said, and so I said, Ryan, you can't, like I said, yeah, on the first question of Orient, you can't.
You busted him. You busted him. That's good.
I busted him. But he goes, well, I was talking to, I think, Pierre McGuire for some broadcasting earlier. Like, I didn't know he had some other session. You can't, like, I didn't know that. You can't, like I said, the first question of a media scrum. You can't.
That's on my own personal list. But yeah, I don't know if we've gotten called out for commenters because of that one.
All right. So Philip R, we are going to ban at the end of the day, or not Philip R. This is Joel B. We're going to ban at the end of the day. We're going to ban. Yeah, no, but that's going to take some work.
Good luck.
We're going to ban, like I said, and we've got Galaxy Brain already on the banned list. And if you want to add more to those, go in. The other commenter I wanted to highlight was Philip R. Because he said it was a good episode because I didn't shit on the world championships. Like, Philip, I want to defend myself here. If you heard me dogging the world championships at all, it was because Canada won gold, and so I didn't want to acknowledge that. I love the world championships.
The last thing that Craig would ever want would be to besmirch the integrity of the world champions, the world championships. It's his favorite thing.
It's my favorite thing in the world, Philip.
And that's counting, well, it's his third favorite thing in the world, but that also counts as kids. So it's behind two kids and ahead of one. He loves the world championships. I won't name names.
I mean, clearly there's a pecking order with my children. The world championship slots right in there. So I just wanted to defend myself. Philip, I love the worlds. If I was at all giving them a hard time, it was because Canada won, and I didn't want to acknowledge that. But Philip's second suggestion, he wants an international segment as part of our hockey show. Now, this is the American segment. It would be, I don't know how we could cram that in, but
we'll figure out a way. I like it. Yeah. I saw that one.
I like that. So maybe we find a way to plug in an international, like, you know, highlighting some sweet game in Sweden where a prospect goes off. It might be a better fit for Max and
Friday,
Corey, Philip. But
that could be.
Sean and I like international hockey. I love the world championships. Basically, I just wanted to defend myself there by highlighting that.
That's what this part of the show is for, is defending yourself against internet commenters, much like Robin Leonard.
Oh my gosh. Robin Leonard, if you want to leave a comment in the app, you just download the Athletic app, go to the podcast. We make it really hard to find, by the way.
I forget every couple weeks. Yeah.
But it's worth it. Search for the podcast, go to details, go to the comments, and we'd like to interact with listeners, because again, that's how this whole podcast was started. Mm-hmm. People wanted a more American podcast. Here we are. Last thing, if you don't subscribe to The Athletic, then you can't do any of this, because the app is part of the subscription, and you want to get a deal, go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow, and you get in for $3.99 a month. Can't beat that, Sean.
Nope.
All right. That's it. Thanks to John Vogel again for joining the podcast. Sean, thank you for all of your great work today.
I did it. Thank you. I thank myself for all of my great work. See you next week, buddy.